ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
We are reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 68, entitled The Marriage of Sambha. Text number 1.
Sri Sukha Vacha Duryodhana Sutam Lakshmanam Sammitam Jayaha Swayamvara, Swayamvara, Stham, Arahat, Sambha, Jambavati Suta, Sri Sukha Uvacha, Duryodhana Sutam Rajan, Lakshmanam Samitim Jayaha, Swayamvara, Tham arahat Sambo jambavati sutaha Shri Sukha uvacha Duryodhana sutam rajan Lakshmanam samitim jayaha Swayamvaras tham arahat Sambo Jambavati Sutaha Sri Sukha Uvacha Duryodhana Sutam Rajan Lakshmanam Samitim Jayaha Swayamvaras Thamarahat Sambo Jambavati Sutaha Sri Sukha Uvacha Jambavati Sutta.
Ladies.
Lakshmanam Samitim Jayaha. Swayamvaras Tham Arahat. Sambo Jambavati Sutta.
Sri Sukha Uvacha, Sukadev Goswami said, Duryodhana Sutam, the daughter of Duryodhana, Rajan, O King Parikshit, Lakshmanam, named Lakshmana, Samitin Jayaha, victorious in battle, Swayamvara, in her Swayamvara ceremony, Stham, situated. Arahat, stole. Sambha, Samba. Jambavati Suta, the son of Jambavati. Translation of Prabhupada, disciples of Srila Prabhupada. Sukadeva Goswami said, O king, Jambavati's son Samba, ever victorious in battle, kidnapped Duryodhana's daughter Lakshmana, from her Swayamvara ceremony. Purport. In Krishna, Srila Prabhupada explains this event as follows. Duryodhana, the son of Dhritarashtra, had a marriageable daughter by the name of Lakshmana. She was a very highly qualified girl of the Kuru dynasty, and many princes wanted to marry her. In such cases, the Swayamvara ceremony is held so that the girl may select her husband according to her own choice. In Lakshmana's Swayamvara assembly, when the girl was to select her husband, Samba appeared. He was the son of Krishna by Jambavati, one of the chief wives of Lord Krishna. His son Samba is so named because, being a very bad child, he always lived close to his mother. The name Samba indicates that his son was very much his mother's pet. Amba means mother and Sa means with. So this special name was given to him because he always remained with his mother. He was also known as Jambavati Suta for the same reason. As previously explained, all the sons of Krishna were as qualified as their great father, Lord Krishna. Samba wanted the daughter of Duryodhana, Lakshmana, although she was not inclined to him. Therefore, Samba kidnapped Lakshmana by force from the Swayamvara ceremony. We'll read the summary of this chapter by the author. This chapter describes how the Kauravas captured Samba and how Lord Baldev dragged the city of Hastinapur to secure his release. Samba, the darling son of Jambavati, kidnapped Duryodhana's daughter Lakshmana for her Swayamvara assembly. In response, the Kauravas joined forces to arrest him. After Samba held them off single-handedly for some time, 6 warriors of the Kaurava party deprived him of his chariot, broke his bow to pieces, seized him, tied him up, and brought both him and Lakshmana back to Hastinapur. When King Ugrasena heard of Samba's capture, he called upon the Yadavas to retaliate. Angered, they prepared to fight, but Lord Balaram pacified them, hoping to avoid a quarrel between the Kuru and the Yadu dynasties. The Lord set off for Hastinapur together with several Brahmanas and Yadava elders. The party of Yadavas set up a camp in a garden outside the city, and Lord Balaram sent Uddhava to ascertain King Dhritarashtra's frame of mind. When Uddhava appeared in the Kaurava court and announced Lord Balaram's arrival, the Kauravas worshipped Uddhava and went to see the Lord, taking auspicious items to offer him. The Kauravas honored Balaram with rituals and items of respect, but when he conveyed Ugrasena's demand that they release Samba, they became angry. "It is very amazing," they said, "that the Yadavas are trying to give orders to the Kauravas. This is like a shoe trying to climb atop one's head. It is from us alone that the Yadavas have obtained their royal thrones, and yet now they are presuming themselves our equals. No longer we will extend to them royal privileges." Having said this, the Kaurava nobles went and tried their city, and Lord Balaram decided that the only way to deal with those who are maddened by false prestige is through brute punishment. As he took his plow weapon and, intending to rid the earth of all the Kurus, began dragging Hastinapur towards the Ganges. Seeing their city was in imminent danger of falling into the river, the terrified Kauravas quickly brought Samba and Lakshmana before Balaram and began to glorify him. Then they prayed, "O Lord, please forgive us who are so ignorant of your true identity." Baldev assured the Kauravas he would not harm them, and Duryodhana presented various wedding gifts to his daughter and new son-in-law. Then Duryodhana, extending his greetings to the Yadavas, requested Lord Balaram to return to Dwarka with Samba and Lakshmana. Hare Krishna. Om Agyanati Mirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya
चक्षुरुन्मीलितं
श्री गुरुवे नमः श्री चैतन्य मनोभीष्टं स्थापितं येन भूतले स्वयं रूप कदा मह्यं ददाति स्वापदान्तिकं वन्देहं श्रीगुरु श्रीयुतापदकमलं श्रीगुरुं वैष्णवांश्च श्रीरूपां साग्रजातां सहगणा रघुनाथान्वितां तं सजीवं साद्वैतं सावधूतं परिजनासहितं कृष्णचैतन्यदेवं श्रीराधा कृष्णपदां सहगणा ललिता शाखान्वितांश्च हे कृष्णा करुणा सिंधु दीनबंधु जगत्पते गोपेशा गोपिका कांत राधा कांत नमोस्तुते तप्त कांचन गौरांगी राधे वृंदावनेश्वरी वृषभानुसुते देवी प्रणमामि हरि प्रिये वांछाकल्पतरुभ्यश्च कृपा सिंधुभ्य एव च पतितानां पावनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासदि गौर भक्तवृंद हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे कृष्ण So after reading about Krishna's marriage, Vishnu Bhagavatam talks about how he kidnapped Rukmini like father, like son. So having heard the excitement of how Krishna married so many other of his queens, eight principal queens, we are now moving forward in the Srimad Bhagavatam reading further more exciting events of now Krishna's sons and grandsons also, how they married their life partners, and therefore it becomes more and more exciting. We can see there's a story where it's very exciting here. And this is what we have got. This is the fortune which we have been blessed with, where even though there may be so many, you know, movies made on these various subjects of love affairs and things like that, a lot of violence and everything, but yet the Srimad Bhagavatam has its very special taste for the Rasika Bhaktas, the Vaishnavas, who would like to take more pleasure in not the mundane love affairs of this world, which are based on lust and pleasure of the decaying flesh, but in the passion of those great heroes, great personalities like Krishna and their sons, who are Nitya Siddhya personalities. What can I say about Krishna's own son? Such a special, supremely special soul, born from Krishna's own body. Obviously, he is a part of the Antaranga Shakti of the Lord. He is not subjected to the material laws. So Srila Prabhupada has opened this oceanic field of understanding, knowledge, nectar, which the world was bereft. Imagine the world before Prabhupada came to this world. The world at large did not know anything of what we are reading now. Completely oblivious to this ancient beautiful knowledge of Srimad Bhagavatam, which is the true glory of the Vedic literature and of course the true glory of our great land of India. So it is so worthy to recount today this very special event which made the world fortunate. One of the symptoms of Kali Yuga is Manda Sumanda Matayo Manda Bhagyahi Upadritaha. That means practically everybody in Kali is subjected to manda bhagya. That means everyone is unfortunate. We can see that. We can see all around us. It's a very unfortunate age to live in, because nothing really good happens here. Right from bad roads to bad weather and dengue malaria and swine flu and all that and cancer, bad air, bad food, bad people, bad relationships, you know, bad educational policies, and capitation fees, and you name it, and it's all sorts of things, rapes and divorces, and you see around the whole world is such a terrible age to live in. And there's no happiness around. Therefore, everyone is manda bhagya. And yet, it is so amazing that the sages worship this age. The most intelligent people, the celebrities of the universe, say this is a great age to be in. It is so wonderful. Because it is the age where this very hidden treasure, very secretive treasure, which is God's own glory, Krishna's own glory, somehow becomes accessible to human society. What accessible only to the Deva society in the Swargaloka and the higher planets, Rishis and Yogis, and hardly descends to the human society, human species, because of it can only descend when there were, you know, very worthy kings who are acting as transparent via mediators between God and man, called Naradevas. And so Rajarshis abounded in our country, then there was access to this great treasure. But with the absence of such monarchy and run over by, you know, demonic politicians, right, there is absolutely no access of the world to this great treasure. And yet in this absolutely unfortunate times in human history, we are so blessed that a man did come from the spiritual sky to change the misfortune of this entire civilization into the most fortunate time to be in. So today is that very special tithi. The Western date was 13th August 1965, Srila Prabhupada mounted the Jaladuta on his momentous voyage to change the world. And today is 30th of August, which is the, and as our Vaishnava calendar honors tithi more than Western dates, it is being mentioned today. So that actually today is the actual day, because we are Vedic followers. For matter of convenience, we performed the ceremonies on 13th, but today is the actual day when it really happened. Because Janmashtami and all these tithis are not by dates. They are by Western calendar, not by... So, it is very significant that we take deep cognizance of the various events which led to this very powerful journey across the Atlantic of this one single 69-year-old gentleman from Bengal. I was once sitting with Radhanath Swami, and I happened to be with a couple who was in our group. His wife had lost her child. He was born a defective child because of his food pipe not being developed properly, as a, what you call as a congenital defect. After several months of trying to save his life at one of the best hospitals in Mumbai, he succumbed. And obviously the parents were attached to this child, because the first child, but it's a lot of years of endeavor, and then now it was a defective child and is no more. So then Maharaj started explaining, after giving good counsel and solace, that imagine the grief of Mother Devaki. He was talking to her, to the mother. The mother was obviously more grief-stricken. That you can imagine now, as a mother who has lost one child, what is the grief of Devaki who had lost six children? And in front of our own eyes, they were smashed on the rock by a brute a savage-like person like Kamsa. Right? So you can empathize. This loss of one child will give you an opportunity to more deeply in your heart genuinely appreciate the grief of Mother Devaki. And if you can do that today, you'll make rapid progress in Krishna consciousness by appreciating Mother Devaki's grief. And your own grief itself, with that appreciation, will go down. I never heard anybody counsel so powerfully. Yeah, and you know, it was very special. So for any one of us who are sitting in this room, to more deeply appreciate, simply appreciate. We can't do like Prabhupada. No one here is like Prabhupada. There cannot be a second man like him. There was never and there will be never. But even if human civilization, human beings, contemporary people can even simply appreciate what Prabhupada has done, that appreciation itself will lead to such powerful insight into the nature of Krishna consciousness as a whole. It is so difficult to understand Krishna because he is so great. He is so great. We call it in a generic term, almighty. Who can understand Krishna? Even Krishna cannot understand Krishna himself. But at least we can try to understand Krishna's pure devotee. In fact, that's why he comes here, so we can see him very closely and understand. See him, feel him. Krishna consciousness is all about feeling spiritual emotions. It's a philosophy. It's a philosophy which makes a person soft-hearted, whereby his heart does not anymore wallow into the mundane feelings of this world of hate and quarrel and like and dislike and honor and dishonor. They don't wallow anymore there. But they really enjoy, relish the emotions of a spiritual nature. So can we try to look more closely at Prabhupada and the emotions he went through in his extremely difficult, arduous attempt to bring Krishna consciousness to this absolutely God-forsaken, degraded world. How from the point of 1922 when the seed is planted in his heart up to 65, 13th August or maybe 30th August, whatever date you want, for these long years, 41 years, what was Prabhupada's life like? The world may more appreciate what he did when he went to America. The historians will see that part. The social people will see the reforms he made thereafter. And the impact he had on the Western world for what he had said, the temples he made, and what people look at either as Hinduism or whatever they want to call it. So people are likely to see more his post-ISKCON days. But there is more glory to Prabhupada in those 41 years than in those 11 years. Because what is that 11, the 41 years is the actually this man doing something so powerful and then Krishna getting convinced that he is the one to do it and then give him the glory. But the real Prabhupada, the compassionate Prabhupada, is more easily seen when he is poor, when he is dejected, when he is absolutely hopeless. Then Prabhupada's heart comes out even more strongly than when he is moving around in Rolls Royces and living in mansions. Prabhupada's business was dwindling. As we all know that he was a pharmacist, a very powerful pharmacist. He had the art of making drugs. Prabhupada made drugs. He understood the science from Bengal chemicals. And he had sort of big laboratories, big pharmacies. They were not small-time things. But somehow, at Lucknow 1948, the business crashed down. And Prabhupada was now seeing that at various times his business was failing. He was an honest man, a hard-working man, he was giving genuine products, he had good policies, but business was always failing. Prabhupada goes to Allahabad in 1948. Now Allahabad is a very special place in Prabhupada's pastimes. 3 days back we celebrated the Divine Disappearance Day of Rupa Goswami. It's important to note today in this connection the closeness between Prabhupada and Rupa Goswami, not only as part of the parampara, but also the fact that of all the places in the world, Rupa Goswami met Lord Chaitanya for the first time in Allahabad. And when he saw this great personality, 7 feet tall with raised hands, and millions of people following behind him chanting Hare Krishna, Rupa Goswami composed this beautiful verse which came out from his heart like a poem. Namo Mahavadanyaya Krishna Prema Pradayate Krishnaya Krishna Chaitanya Namine Gauratvise Namaha. This exposition of his appreciation of Lord Chaitanya came out in such a beautiful manner that this is the person who is bringing this very esoteric, very rare, highly purified, crystallized essence of Vedic literatures in a manner never exposed to the world, in a most accessible manner through the chanting of Hare Krishna. As Maharaj often says, Krishna Prem through Krishna Naam. So that was the first meeting at the Shashwamedh Ghat with Lord Chaitanya, who was the prime inaugurator of the Sankirtan movement. And you have Rupa Goswami from the spiritual world, Rupa Manjari, both sitting together at the Shashwamedh Ghat and being instructed on the principles of Shuddha Bhakti, which are encoded in the scripture like the Shamrita and Bhakti Samrita Sindhu. So it is a very special place because Lord Chaitanya, more than him telling the world what is bhakti, he wanted his pure devotees to expound so that they get the glory. So Allahabad is so special because the seed of Manobhishtam, we say Rupa Goswami is Chaitanya Manobhishtam, that great personality who understood the Manobhishtam, the Icha, the internal Icha of the mind of Lord Chaitanya, and Sthapitam, and firmly established in this world his Icha as the most important pursuit of human civilization. When will that person, Swayam Rupa Kadamayam, Kadamayam means when, Kada, Mayam unto me, Dadati Swa, when will he give me? Padantikam, shelter at his lotus feet. So therefore Allahabad is so special because Rupa Goswami received, inherited the legacy of Lord Chaitanya at that place. And Prabhupada also, historically and significantly, took his diksha from the parampara at Allahabad. 1932-1933, his initiations, first and second. And therefore he got connected with the Icha, the Manobhishtam of Lord Chaitanya, again through Saraswati Thakur at Allahabad itself. So that is very significant. That Rupa Goswami's Icha, Lord Chaitanya's Icha was taken up by Rupa Goswami, Rupa Goswami's Icha was taken up by Saraswati Thakur, Rupa Anuga Vruddhapa Siddhanta Dhvanta Harine, and Rupa Goswami's Icha, which was now transported to Saraswati Thakur, was again implanted in the heart of Prabhupada at Allahabad. So we find Prabhupada this burning desire. Now when do we call something as burning desire? We all have desires, but when does it burn? When can a desire burn you? When it consumes, or the fire has a power to consume. When a fire consumes with paper, wood, cloth, anything, it consumes it, it destroys it. When you have burning desire, it consumes your existence. Prabhupada's existence was getting consumed by this one desire to make Krishna conscious of the world. That was this intensity. There was absolutely nothing in the world which would even for a moment put Prabhupada, you know, waver him off from that one pointed desire. Neither loneliness nor poverty nor rejection, nothing. That is what is, you were sitting with the, and then somehow he was doing little business in 1950, little business just to keep himself floating with some money. So then for a business deal he went to Jhansi, 1950. There was one Mr. Dubey he met there. He was owning a hospital. He said, I can get you in touch with a lot of people here. So Prabhupada first began, it's very interesting for me, Prabhupada's first audience to preach in a little larger scale was doctors. So there was a group of young Ayurvedic doctors who Prabhupada met at Jhansi for the first time. And there were 100 of them, it's not a small number. And Acharya Prabhakar was the CMO, Chief Medical Officer of the Ayurvedic University Hospital. So Prabhupada saw in these young boys a potential that they would become devotees. So the Jhansi chapter of Prabhupada is very, very powerful. It's very, very powerful. And here we see this person who's apparently gone for some business, but it is this very, very insignificant part of his endeavor. He strives to meet so many people in Jhansi. Somebody reminded him that, oh, Prabhupada, you are coming. And at that time he was not Prabhupada, that time he was Abhay Charan Dey or Bhaktivedanta Swami. And so much you are coming here, this is the place where Rani Lakshmibai established, you know, her mission to eradicate the British. National uprising, Jhansi Ki Rani is very famous in Indian history, all of us know, 1857. Said, this is a place for you also. And they said, oh, this is a place where Lord Ram came and also, you know, did this tapasya here. And so they were all encouraging him like that. So you would meet various people. And then we find Prabhupada is walking on the road. He had a very strict schedule, getting up in the morning at 4 o'clock, doing his translation. This translation business is not something that Prabhupada did after he went to America to write Bhagavatam. It was something which he did for his life practically. He would sleep for a few hours and 4 o'clock in the morning, the first thing, apparently first thing, before even chanting his rounds, was writing his books. So you know, you can see Prabhupada apparently giving that so much importance because Sita Thakur had told him, 1932, if ever you get money, you print books at Radha Kund, the holiest of all holy places in the universe, Radha Kund. He was given this order. So that became like his first command of his life. 4 to 5 translation work. 5 o'clock going for a walk. It's 5:30 to 7 o'clock chanting his rounds and taking his, doing his other rituals, and again at 10 o'clock sitting for his typewriter writing. Anyway, so he was going out for his stroll and then he saw this place called as Bharati Bhavan. A deserted place, nobody was using it much, it was there for a while, and just some small programs on Sunday, whatever. And he found that this place can be obtained. And then, interesting enough, Prabhupada finds a plaque there, which says, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. He finds this plaque and Prabhupada said, this is my place. He tells the owner who actually, Mr. Bhayal, he said, this is, he tells him with conviction that this place Krishna made for me. So can you just see if you can negotiate this place and I want to get this place. And then he said, okay, you can come here and you can show him the place. And Prabhupada immediately, there are a group of buildings there in this compound. Prabhupada said, this will be the office, this will be the Brahmachari ashram, this will be the sannyas ashram, this will be the kitchen, this will be this for the altar. Immediately this man started designing the whole place. This is Prabhupada. This is Prabhupada. Wherever he went, he was so Krishna conscious. And this place was owned by a lady called as Radha Bai. So he was even more convinced. This is owned by Radha Bai, some 1939 landowner's wife. You know, this is meant, Radha Bai means this must be meant for Krishna only. So Prabhupada was looking for all these, you know, very interesting signs, how it meant for Krishna. It makes a lot of effort and starts before the ISKCON acronym came. It was the League of Devotees. That came probably from the impact of the World War, the League of Nations. That was so much in the air in the 1950s. The League of Nations was just beginning to get things done, and still there was a lot of Cold War between Russia and America, and that was going on. So the League of Nations was trying to do something to, you know, and then the UN was being formed. So, you know, Prabhupada was in this mood. He was a freedom fighter. So, League of Devotees. That was his first name of his international society. And Prabhupada makes a prospectus for this League of Devotees. He said, wanted Brahmanas. This is the ad Prabhupada gives. Prabhupada is so innocent and so pure and so determined. Wanted Brahmanas. You know, do you ever seen an ad like that? Wanted young people for a job as accountant, you know, as a this or that, you know, whatever. He said, wanted Brahmanas for being trained to preach all over the world. And we offer free boarding and lodging for one who does this. That. This is Prabhupada's ad in Jhansi. Who would apply for that? Wanted Brahmanas. And then in 1953, Prabhupada actually inaugurates this international society there. He spends something like 3,000 rupees in a big function where the governor comes and the magistrate comes and local people come and celebrities, everyone comes. It's a big thing. And it starts off for 6 months, it goes on, and people understand this is Bhaktivedanta Swami's place, the League of Nations, the League of Devotees. But Prabhupada is a person whom Krishna tested apparently so much that he was punctuated repeatedly by massive failures. Earlier in his business, and then in his family life. Now Prabhupada could have had a very nice family life with a nice devoted wife, said yes, like that. But Krishna made it like that specifically. No ordinary soul could be Prabhupada's wife, right? The world acharya's wife cannot be ordinary lady. But, you know, it is made like that. Like mantra was used so that Ramayana can go on. Like that, you know. Similarly, she is also being used apparently to create a sense of complete distrust in Prabhupada. She absolutely does not like this old man going again and again to Allahabad, going again and again to Vrindavan, again and again printing his books, just writing, preaching. Where is the money? 5 children, where is the money to run the show? Right? So she is very unhappy with him. That's the type of leela which is being depicted. Extremely unhappy with him. She's drinking tea and all that. She's not interested in Prabhupada's work at all. So massive disappointment on the family front at all also. So Prabhupada has been punctuated all the time with hopelessness. And suddenly this letter comes to Prabhupada in Jhansi that if you really want this building, you have to pay 5,000 rupees. So what looked like Prabhupada and Mr. Bhayal had given him, said like a free gift, you know, said you can use it as much as you want, you know, at a good cause and you can use it. Suddenly he gets this massive request, 5,000 rupees? It's easily 50 lakhs today, right? 100 times average inflation, right? So what is 5,053 is easily 50 lakhs. Now 50 lakhs is a huge amount, even for a big business person, right? It's suddenly a down payment of 50 lakhs. Who can do that? So it is obviously a call to Prabhupada to leave. Prabhupada argued. He wrote a 30-point letter to this Mrs. Munshi. Now, we are connected to her very intimately. We are residing on her road, or her, not her road, it's Krishna's road, but still, K. Munshi Marg. Right? Same Kanyal Munshi, her wife, his wife was there as a governor. She was the governor of Jhansi that time. So this is for a Mahila Samiti. Right? So Prabhupada had 30 points. I came to Jhansi and so-and-so date. I did this. I went to Lucknow, got it registered. It's a whole 30 points set. And he got all the endorsement of various people he had met who had liked his work. But there is called a Rajhat, Stri Hat, and Balhat, right? I think I heard it many years ago. Stri Hat. Stri Hat means when a lady takes to obstinacy, nobody can change her mind. So the governor's wife was not to be changed mind. Prabhupada had to leave. So from heights of hopes of something really happening, because program was going, preaching was taking place, Prabhupada would go to villages. He would go to different villages 20 miles away from Jhansi. He would go to 5 villages in 5 days and preach. And from all that preaching that was taking place, he was getting people interested. absolute zero. Zero. And please remember now, Prabhupada is a sannyasi. Right? He has no place to go. In Prabhupada's life, it is very painful. Very painful of the heart to read that Prabhupada would not have even 25 paisa in his pocket. Not even 25 paisa, charana. You would not even have that much. Right? So, his poverty is very striking. His pre-American days, the most striking thing is his poverty. He was always a beggar, begging for money, but not for himself. There are a lot of beggars in India, all begging for themselves. They are useless fellows. Most of them are all cheats. Right? But he was a man who was begging for money to print his books. After 1944, when the BTG began, till again 52, he could not produce a single, few books were magazines were released. After, from 52 onwards, again he started back to write a magazine. Started again. Four pages. Four sides. Sitting next to, imagine this same Prabhupada, who was being welcomed by 100 people playing mrudangas at the Heathrow Airport, and it was giving big pandal programs, right? He would sit next to a bench at the Chai Wale Ka Thela, right? Talking to them, would you like to have this magazine? Like an ordinary paper vendor. What is the price of that magazine? 6 paisa. 6 paisa ka back to go to that magazine. Huh? And even that did not attract any buyers. And the paper was such a scarcity. Get the paper to the proofreading. Prabhupada was going. And then you go to big people. On one hand, he was distributing to the thelawalas at the chai ka dukan and other places on the shops. And other people, he was contacting the Supreme Justice of India. Prabhupada had this wide range of people. He was absolutely samadarshana. He would really go to the poorest of poor people, hoping that he would buy something. Because he was seeing the soul. He was not looking at the Supreme Justice of the time, who was one of the patrons of the magazine as well. Right? And he would write letters of the Supreme Justice. I don't remember his name. He writes, "Oh, this is a nice magazine." So he would take his letter and said, "See, the Supreme Justice is reading my paper." Right? So it is a wide audience he would reach to. And for printing his magazine, there was one Mr. Surendra Jain who would come to Prabhupada with his proofreading this thing and said, "Swamiji, apne kuch khaya hai subah se?" And he knew for sure this man has no money to eat even breakfast. He didn't have money to eat even breakfast. And he would say, "Okay, main aapke liye mangata hun." He would give money, bring manga for him. Right? He was convinced Prabhupada had not even charana to eat his simple breakfast. It goes on like that, and then you find Prabhupada, his vision. He writes letters to governors, chief ministers, presidents. He was thinking, Prabhupada said, "I had this disease to never think small." So he writes a letter at that time to Rajendra Prasad, the president of the country. This poverty stricken man who has no chara in his pocket to even eat his breakfast, but he is convinced of his message so much, he sent a letter to His Excellency Rajendra Prasad. The letter is very special. "I have a clue," he writes the president of the country, "to bring people back to Godhead." That is what the letter is saying. "I have the clue to bring people back to Godhead." And he sends 50 copies, free copies to His Excellency about his message to the world. Right? And of course, no reply. Prabhupada's life shows a man of complete conviction. Generally, man who is poverty stricken and hopeless and homeless And he himself has, you know, I am so daridra myself. Who's going to listen to me? And who's going to listen? He's going to be so depressed. But Prabhupada is never depressed. A man who is a complete failure, apparently materially and spiritually, must be very severely depressed to the point of suicide. Right? But Prabhupada is thinking of eternal life, not of suicide. Not for himself, but for all humanity. That is Prabhupada. So convinced about his message. Right? Keep on writing. So in this way he goes, he tries Jhansi, it is a failure. Then he goes to Delhi, back to a magazine. Doesn't seem to work out there also. And then Prabhupada ultimately goes to Vrindavan. Goes to Vrindavan. Again, no place to stay. And now imagine Prabhupada, this old man. How many houses Prabhupada stayed in? There's no record of that. We know he said Bamsi Gopalji temple for 3 years. 3 years at Radhamada Mandir. That's just a known part of history. But when he's in Delhi, he stays 1 week at some friend's place, 1 week at the magistrate's place, 1 week at the dukandar's place, 1 week at some, you know, lawyer's place. He just stays at different places every week. One place, a friend's place. He just keeps on staying. He has no place to stay. He has no permanent residential address. There's no place to stay. Keeps on staying at different places, homes. And then he takes shelter of his godbrothers, Bhakti Saranga Maharaj and Bhakti Kesava Maharaj. Said, "Oh, Swamiji, you have come, you know, please come and stay in our mutt." Prabhupada feels very hopeful that I will simply work as a humble servant of my godbrothers. Because they know his intellect. They know Prabhupada's intellect very strongly. They said, "This man, if he's in our mutt, he's an asset to us." Because we don't have intellectual people. The brahmacharis that time were like illiterate, poor, coming from, you know, low class Bengali families, you know, have no background whatsoever, untrained completely. And yet as a majestic, powerful, royal person is coming and staying in their mutt, he can take out the whole charge of the entire mutt and make things happen. Right? So they are very eager to, like, Kesava Maharaj is pulling him, and Bhakti Saranga Maharaj is also pulling him, so you can stay in my mutt. So Prabhupada is obliging to both. He stays here and stays there, writes, becomes editor of Sajjan Toshani magazine. Immediately he's put as editor. Please remember, Sajjan Toshani is the descendant of the Harmonist. It's a very powerful magazine, Sarasvati Bhaskaracharya Thakur, which was like a very, very powerful journal on Gaudiya Vaishnavism. Prabhupada becomes editor of that. Writes so many things, he writes. So Prabhupada has always been a writer. He's always a writer. He was always writing. How many millions of pages he must have written? There's no record of that. How many letters Prabhupada wrote of request? There's no record of that. Literally, I mean, even after Prabhupada's ISKCON days, we find the whole compendium of, you know, his letters written to his disciples. Like we just had a, you know, Prabhupada disciple in Kolkata the other day saying, "I received from Prabhupada 35 letters. So I've given it to the archives for being restored and preserved for posterity." So if one disciple had received in just 2 years 35 letters from Prabhupada. Right, so Prabhupada he was always with his pen and paper, mightier than the sword, Prabhupada's pen, writing, always writing. Tireless, his hand never got tired of writing the message of Lord, message of Godhead. One of his magazines was called Message of Godhead. he's always a writer. Anyway, so he's writing this magazine, Sajjan Toshani, because they knew that Sarasvati Thakur had recognized this, Prabhupada. So Sakura told his disciples that whatever Swamiji writes, print it. Because that was, everyone in the mutt knew, Prabhupada, Sakura disciples knew that this man, whatever he writes, endorsed by our spiritual master, he writes perfect, as per parampara, pure message. So he was writing these magazines, but still staying with completely untrained Bengali brahmacharis who are fighting for stupid things, Prabhupada could not stay there for too long. Right, so you know he had to vacate that place, and there was infighting going on. So you know, find Prabhupada, as I said before, punctuated again and again by failures, hopes running to the sky and then crashing back. Right, So again with his godbrothers, again, no support, no support. Again, homelessness, hopelessness. He settles down in Vrindavan. And then again, Prabhupada is always contacting people, meeting various people. That generates some interest. And he happened to meet a Mathura businessman, Mr. Agarwal. Out of millions of people he must have met, telling them, I want to go to America to preach. And one of the people he just met in passing, Mr. Agarwal. He said, okay, Swamiji, I'll do something for you. And Prabhupada forgot about it. Because you tell so many people the same thing, you know, you forget who are the people I met also practically. And after a long time, suddenly there is a letter in Prabhupada's home, that your journey to America has been sponsored. Now, can you imagine, as I said before, spiritual life is all about emotions. Can you imagine now this man who is hopelessly failing because he sees the abject neglect of Indian politicians and Indians who are so enamored by the West, they couldn't care less about theism. In fact, they would tell Swamiji, Swamiji, our India has become a pauper today because we are so religious. So get rid of this religion completely so that India can prosper. Stupid ideas. The richest state in the country was Vijayanagar. We went to this place, Hampi, right? Hampi, we went a few months back, we were there. It was, as per even the historians of the world, the richest kingdom ever in recent times. Ever. More than the Romans and all that. It had rained gold in the kingdom. Raining gold. This is history. This is not mythology. It had rained gold in the kingdom. Actually. And there were stalls. When we saw, there are stalls not selling karela and bhendi, but stalls with people in baskets selling pearls and doobies and diamonds. And not one or two of them, 100 stalls selling rubies and like as if it is selling bhendis and gwari and aloo and kanda. This was the type of stalls they had there. Krishna Devaraya, a great Vaishnav. And people want to believe that, you know, religion makes you poor. Stupid. By neglecting Lakshmipati, you can never be happy. But when you actually worship Krishna, but all good fortune comes because Lakshmiji is pleased. All good fortune comes. Anyway, there's a different type of ideology which we cannot. So the point is, we find Prabhupada like that. Now, getting this sudden letter from nowhere that your trip to America is sponsored by Gopal Agarwal. And Prabhupada's emotion must have risen so to the sky, that the fountain of joy bursting in his heart. He had never seen a letter like this. He must have not believed it. Am I really going to America? Right? But there are four formalities. Passport, a visa, a P form, and a ticket. Right? There are four things to be done still, apart from the sponsorship letter. So the P form was some sort of a ritual which the SBI has to really, give you a letter that this man has got no debts in the country and he's like free from all other obligations financially and he can go. Right? And the passport and everything else. Prabhupada even started, into a frenzy of activity. And now he's like, here is his chance to really go. So he gets the passport with not much of difficulty. But the P form takes a lot of effort. Because, he said that, see, Swamiji, your sponsorship is not by institute. Your sponsorship is by a private party. So we really cannot really give you this. So he gets repeated rejections even for getting his P form, signed. So Prabhupada, he's a person who never took no for an answer. Never. Said, send me to your higher ups. Like somebody can argue, aapka boss kaun hai? Who's your boss? Tell me, who's your boss? So he would go to the right to the top. And argue and says, why are you not sending me? Right? would argue till that man relented and said, okay. So he went to Mr. Rao, who was that time the chief of the SBI. He just said, this. You know, he must have convinced him so many things. I'm going for this purpose to spread the message of India, the message of peace to the world. Right? He said, Swamiji, don't worry. I'm going to sign it. So he signed it. He said, okay, you can go. It's done. Right? So in this way, Prabhupada was getting, now there was apparent success coming. And then, of course, was the visa. We also came without much difficulty. But then was the last things remaining. And the whole thing was the ticket. And ticket requires money. Where do you get money from? And as I said before, the most prominent part of Prabhupada's life before he went to America is his abject, complete poverty. He was absolutely broken person. He never had any money. And what little money he had? Print books. It's now for himself. Now for staying comfortable. He was just meant to print books, print magazines. So he always remained in the red. Never a surplus. Never a bank account. Never credit. Always in debit. It was Prabhupada. He was always in debit. Right? So then, he's thinking, he goes to various donors now. He goes to various, writes so many letters to so many donors. He would keep a diary of so many donors he can meet. Ask him, give me a ticket to go to America. And people would misunderstand. This man wants to go to America, but probably wants to see America. America people go for, New York, having a good time, San Francisco, right? Said, no, I'm not going for that. And at last he learned that there is a very pious lady called Mrs. Sumati Morarji, who is a Vallabhacharya Pashtimargi Vaishnavi, right? And she is very devout in her heart and is very philanthropic also. And so his target was now on Sumati Morarji. Prabhupada would never leave unless it really turned off completely. He would never leave it. He was always hopeful. He was always hopeful that Krishna can act from any side. Because ultimately he was convinced that if I'm not the doer, I'm just putting so much of effort here, but I'm not the doer. Krishna is the doer. And Krishna can act through this, or Krishna can act through that, Krishna can act to him or to her. Krishna can act through any person. And where is the person going to be? He don't know. So Prabhupada would leave no stone unturned. Every stone he had to turn and see whether this is the right stone. This is the right stone. Every stone had to be turned over to see. Is it the right stone? He was turning every stone he met. That could be the stone which would take him across the ocean. Right? So here was Mr. Sumati Morarji. Right? And then there are always hurdles. Right? It always hurdles were there. And then to be such a big lady. Now Sumati Morarji, please, for us it might be like, she was a very big lady. It's a very big business magnate. And from today's standards, he was very, really big. He's an international figure, right? You just can't barge into our office, and that too in saffron clothes. You don't have any business purposes. How can you just walk in there, right? So Prabhupada is not able to meet her out of so many requests. And we heard from some Vaishnavas who met some people who are in her office that Prabhupada literally visited her office at least 100 times. 100 times he must have come to the office for various things he had to get done through her. And there's one point which is recorded in history, is the time when he actually sat on the floor outside the office on the staircase for 6 hours chanting his rounds. Because they're not allowing him to go inside. When this lady comes out from office, he will sight her and say, Swamiji, kya kaam hai? And then he'll immediately bring about his cause, right? So Prabhupada had to sit again, as I said, like a transcendental beggar, begging for Krishna. So he sits there, right? And of course he cites him and said, Swamiji, what do you want? Then I want to have a meeting with you. He said, come tomorrow. Done. Okay, at least that part is done. We'll meet him tomorrow. And she is not going to relent and say, okay, here is your ticket. After meeting him several times, Swamiji says, no, Swamiji, you should not go. You should not go to America. Now, she was not saying because she didn't want to give the ticket. That was easy for her. So she was concerned that this old man will die. He will die in the freezing cold of New York. And she'll be ultimately feeling the guilt and responsibility that this, she sent this man to America to do whatever he wants to do, his mission. And he died in America, all alone. No family, no money, no support, nothing. He will die. And I'll feel guilty for that. She cannot go. So she kept on saying no and no and no. And Prabhupada has said, never accepted a no in his life from anybody. And he kept on persisting. He kept on persisting. He was so persuasive. He was so convinced that his Guru Maharaj's desire will come through. These are three Prabhupada's convictions. The power of his convictions came from three things. One is his complete implicit faith in Lord Chaitanya's prophecy. Prithivityachayada Nagaradigram. He is so thoroughly convinced about this. If it is Lord Chaitanya's prophecy, it has to come to pass. It has to happen. And no force in the entire creation up to Brahmaloka can put a dam to obstruct the flow of God's will. He was convinced about this. The second was in the order of his Guru Maharaj. You are a young man. You should go to the West and preach Krishna consciousness in the English speaking world. He was convinced about the instruction, the power of Guru Nishtha. If Guru has said something, it must happen, because Guru only speaks the word of God. The Guru only speaks the voice of Krishna in his heart. He speaks nothing ever for himself. So he was convinced about this mandate which he received in 1922, Uddadanga Junction Road, Kolkata. And the third was Prabhupada's implicit faith in the power of the holy name. The holy name is the only means of deliverance in this age of Kali Yuga. Thoroughly convinced. These are the three strengths of Srila Prabhupada, which gives him conviction to spread his message. And at last, based on these convictions, his desire surmounted Srimati Maharaj's desire to not send him. And she relented. Okay, Swamiji, I will send you. So now all the four things have happened. The P form is ready, the visa is ready, the passport is ready, and also now the ticket to America is ready. Right? Prabhupada's emotions are surging high, but he feels on one hand even more helpless. Why? Because the task in front of him is so monumental. To preach to the West, not a single human being in the history has done this. It is easy to walk on a path that people have walked in the same path. You know, in the jungle also, people walk the same road, 100 million people walk. Then the road is cleared even in the jungle also. Because people keep stamping on the grass and then some road is cleared. Right? But the path that Prabhupada was taking to preach Krishna consciousness, that road has not been taken by any single human being in the history. It's a completely novel idea, which even Shastra said should not be done. Imagine Shastra saying this. The Shastra is written not by man. The Shastra has said no human being from the East should ever go to the West to preach. And people who read Shastra said, well, this is the mandate, so we will not go. We will only preach in India. So Madhvacharya, Ramadvacharya, Vishnu Swami, all the great souls, Tukaram, all these great souls, they never went out of America, never went out of India. They're always in the Indian subcontinent. But it was not Lord Chaitanya. He said, Prithvi. Prithvi is not India. Prithvi Ache. Prithvi Ache means the whole world. Prabhupada had more faith in Lord Chaitanya's predictions than the words of the Shastra. Lord Chaitanya said it. It is Prithvi. Prithvi means not India, not Bengal. Prithvi means the whole world. Sarvanagara. Sarva means all villages of the whole world. Not Indian villages. The villages in America also. Villages in Brazil also. villages are there everywhere. In Bali also. Villages there in, you know, in Kazakhstan also. There are villages everywhere. Right? Sarvanagaradigram. Convinced. Right? And then you find Prabhupada is now, you know, Sondi Maharaj gives the this job to Mr. Choksi. So now you do all the details of his Prabhupada is staying now at Andheri. Andheri is a place where the senior ship colony was there. It was a little deep inside. Prabhupada never took a bus from Andheri. He walked. He walked to save what must have been probably 2 paisa ticket at that time, I don't know. Or maybe 5 paisa at the most. To save that 5 paisa for the walk 4 kilometers into Andheri, you know. For him, that even small fragment of a paisa was important. Because he had seen what is poverty and he wanted to keep that 1 paisa for Krishna's seva. So Prabhupada was staying there, and even there, his pen never stopped and his tongue never stopped preaching. He was sitting there, he's not just preparing, okay, now I'm going to America, he's all started dreaming. No. Even there he starts preaching. Where Prabhupada went, he was always talking about Krishna. Wherever he was, with whomever he was, this mandate Mahaprabhu gave, Yare dekha, tare kaho, Krishna upadesh. Amaragya, Guru haiya, tare hi desh. This was living example is Prabhupada. No matter whom he met, he was sitting in Dr. Shastri's clinic in Jhansi, and giving some medical remedies to the patient also, he would start preaching. Sitting in Mr. Bose's clinic at Allahabad, he would still start preaching to the patients. He could not stop preaching about Krishna. What was there for him worthy of speaking than Krishna? Nothing more important. Tare desh. Just keep preaching. In his India, and then he started preaching. And they go and buy, you know, a long coat for Prabhupada. It'll be very cold. Buy about 10 sets of dhotis for him and all that. Formalities are being done and Prabhupada's thing. And then he takes the cheapest of the cheapest train, cheapest fare. Takes a long time from here to Kolkata. Cheapest bhada. Now, last time he goes from Bombay to Kolkata. And then of course he goes to Mayapur. Right? You know, why to go to Mayapur? Saraswati Thakur's Samadhi is there. He had to take the blessings of his Guru Maharaj, obviously. He was going only for him. He had no desire. He was a complete desireless person. No desire of his own. Prabhupada is a person who is desireless. His only desire to fulfill the mandate of his Guru Maharaj. How he must have cried. How he must have begged. Can't imagine. But blessings were there now with Prabhupada. And then that fateful day comes at last. 13th August. That day comes. And the rest of course is history. We have seen, we have read Lilamrita. But I believe it is very important for us at ISKCON as Prabhupada's children, grandchildren, to assimilate this part of Prabhupada's life more closely. As I said before, we tend to look at the glamorous part of ISKCON after it has started. And that's important because it brought about a world change. But in our heart of hearts, our appreciation of Prabhupada will be more deeper when we read about Prabhupada 22 to 65. That window is the real Prabhupada. The compassionate Prabhupada. The kind Prabhupada. The gentle. The polite. The courteous. The soft-hearted. The humble Prabhupada. Who is not the world Acharya, but he is a simple, powerful, saintly personality. That is something which we have to deeply absorb. as Maharaj often says, you know, and this is very, very nice. So after hearing all this and reading all this, what happens? What happens to us? Yes, appreciation of Prabhupada. Definitely. But our heart will open. The heart has a door. The heart has a door. The door is blocked by ahankar. Ahankar prevents the grace of Krishna entering into the chambers of our heart. But when we read about Prabhupada, doors open and Krishna's mercy can enter. Prabhupada's mercy can enter. And it is that mercy which purifies our consciousness. It's not so much our sadhana that we should do, because at least we have to do something to please Krishna. The little bit of we have to do to stand our rounds and follow our principles and come to the temple and go on yatras and eat prasadam and so associate with devotees, that we should do a small bit. But to go back to Godhead, even for a country to get freedom, it takes centuries for one country to go away from foreign rule. For the soul to get freedom takes millions of lifetimes. Freedom from the cycle of birth and death. Freedom from the three modes. Freedom from the illusory energy which is as powerful as Krishna. That requires lifetimes. And that lifetimes of energy which is oceanic to cross can become a puddle. Bhagavatam says it can become just a small puddle in which the hoof print of a calf can... Calf's hoof print is so small. The effort to cross the ocean of birth and death, which is voluminous like the Pacific Ocean, can contract into the water contained in the footprint of a calf when that grace enters into the heart. It is that grace which makes the journey to the kingdom of God so easy. Without that grace, we can keep on chanting and struggling with our rounds for millions of lifetimes and not get anywhere. So we desperately need that grace of the Parampara and Prabhupada in our life. And that comes when we deeply assimilate Prabhupada's life. More than Krishna's life. As I said before, we understand. This is very difficult to understand. But can we at least begin to appreciate the man who lived with us in flesh and blood and walked on earth amongst us? Just 50 years ago, he was on this planet. Right? Can we appreciate him more deeply? If we can do that, our life is successful. Right? So, that is the immense value of the Lilamrit. And of all those movies which are made on Prabhupada, there will be a time when there will be more books on Prabhupada than even Krishna. Right? Prabhupada's glory is expanding. Every disciple is writing a book. How this man in 11 years impacted the minds and conscious people so powerfully that they can only put it in a book format so people in the world can know this. So in our curriculum of Krishna conscious growth, we must always have two types of reading. One reading is about Krishna and one reading is about Prabhupada. The man who gave Krishna and the man himself. We should, if we have this balanced reading of both, it creates a big balance. A powerful balance and keeps us grounded. If we read only about Krishna, we may get some all esoteric fancy ideas about back to God and all that. It remains a very ethereal utopian philosophy. And we read about Prabhupada, the man who gave the world Krishna, we can really connect with him more closely. And we can only get connected with Krishna through Prabhupada.
to think that we can ever get connected to Krishna without Prabhupada is like the dwarf trying to touch the moon. The sky is like Krishna. A dwarf is trying to touch the moon by jumping. He will not jump, he will not touch it in a million lifetimes. Right? So our attempt to touch Krishna's lotus feet is like the dwarf. But our access to Krishna's lotus feet is so easy when we catch Srila Prabhupada's lotus feet. Because he's connected. Nama Om. His feet are connected with Vishnu already. We connect to his lotus feet. Just like when you touch the Ganga, sitting in the Hugli or sitting on the Mayapur, you touch Ganga water, you are actually connected with Vishnu's lotus feet. She is Vishnu Padi. You touch the Ganga, you are going in a boat ride to Godrumadvip. Right? You just touch the Ganga there on the side. She's just so close. She's 1 feet down. You touch Ganga down, you're actually touching Vishnu, who is the Karana ocean. He's right there in the Karana causal ocean, but you're touching him there because you're touching Ganga. Right? Simply when you touch Prabhupada's feet, you're touching Krishna's feet automatically. You offer a flower to Prabhupada, you're offering it to Krishna. You offer some money to Prabhupada, the money going to Krishna. You offer some prayers to Prabhupada, he's teaching Krishna. He is our conductor. He is the live wire of transcendental grace. If you touch a wire here, you connect to the powerhouse. Correct? Touch this wire here, a live wire here, you connect to the powerhouse. Powerhouse is Krishna. Right? You touch Prabhupada's feet, you accept his grace, his instructions in your heart, you are connected with the parampara to Krishna. Right? So let us always keep our heads bowed down at his lotus feet. Prabhupada ki. Gaur Paramanande. Hare Krishna.